The hidden power of words. How men first learned to invent words is unknown. In other words, the origin of language is a mystery. All we really know is that men, unlike animals, somehow invented certain sounds to express their thoughts, feelings, and actions. They did this so they could communicate with each other, and that later they agreed upon certain signs, symbols, which could be combined to represent those sounds, and which later could be written down. These sounds, whether spoken or written in letters, we call words. A word, then, is simply a sound or the written sign of a sound, which men of any particular nation have agreed shall mean a certain thing, a certain action, feeling, or thought. How can such mere signs have any power? Well, of course, it is not the sign itself that has the power, but the thing or what it stands for. A foreign word, which has no meaning for us, can have no power over us. But the meaning of many words of our language have the power to move in us the passions of fear, love, hate, anger, desire, shame, joy, and sorrow. To call a man a coward will make him blush for shame or incite him in a blaze of indignant anger. To tell him a loved one is dead will fill him with sorrow. To tell a poor man he is rich will fill him with joy. And there are words for which men have died for, many men have died for, such as fatherland, king, and faith. The power of words, then, lies in their associations, the things they bring up before our minds. Words become filled with meaning for us by experience, and the longer we live, the more certain words recall to us the glad and sad events of our past. And the more we read and learn, the more the number of words that mean something to us increases. Great writers are those who not only have great thoughts, but who express these thoughts in words which appeal powerfully to our minds and emotions. This charming and telling use of words is what we call literary style. Above all, the real poet is a master of words. He or she can convey his meaning in words which sing like music, and which by their position and association can move men to tears. Words are alive. As time passes, they are born, they grow to full maturity, and then they die. And they change morally. Some that begin as common words become great and noble like religion. That word originally meant a bond. And some innocent words become degraded. For example, a villain originally meant simply a farmer, and knave meant simply a boy servant. And words like coins get worn and rubbed with use till they lose their true meaning and become weak and ineffective. For example, nice meant originally dainty, delicate, fine, while now it means literally almost anything. We should therefore choose our words carefully and use them accurately. Words are potent weapons for all causes, good or bad, said Manly P. Hall. Words sacred, profane, tender, harsh, inspiring, damning. What hopes and fears, what crises have been brought about by words? Words are extremely powerful tools that we can use to uplift our personal energy and improve our lives, though we're not often conscious of the words we speak, read, and expose ourselves to. Yes, even the words of others can affect our personal vibrations. Spend a few minutes with a chronic complainer who uses all sorts of negative terms, and you'll find your personal energy bottom out. Words have great power, so choose them wisely. Words do have power. Their meaning crystallizes perceptions that shape our beliefs, drive our behavior, and ultimately create our world. Their power arises from our emotional spot responses when we read, speak, or hear them. Just say the word fire while barbecuing, or in the workplace, or in a crowded theater, and you'll get three completely different, but powerful, emotional, and energetic reactions. Roughly 30 years ago, a Japanese scientist named Masaru Emoto performed one of the most fascinating experiments on the effect that words have on energy. These experiments are very detailed in his series of books, starting with The Hidden Messages of Words. How many times do we throw our words away? We say things like, I hate my hair. I'm so stupid. I'm such a klutz. We never think that these words bring negative energy into our being and affect us on a lot of different levels, but they certainly do. Mr. Emoto's experiments were conducted mainly with water. Have you ever wondered why water? It's because sound vibrations travel through water 4 times faster and through open air. Now consider the fact that your body is over 70% water, and you'll understand how quickly the vibrations from a single negative word resonates in the cells of your body. The American poet Emily Dickinson said this: a word is dead when it is said, some say. I say it just begins to live that day. Not one of us is insensitive to the effect of great poetry, nor to the combination and arrangement of words, nor to their proper delivery. The charm of the spoken word is both subtle and great. Who among us can read the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita and not be spellbound by the magic poetry and potency of its words? Words like music set every chord in our nature to vibrating, arousing us to action or lulling us to tranquility. Every word sets in motion a force which creates or destroys according to the feeling we put in it. Words that are the vehicles of force, spirit, feeling. In short, they are the bodies of their indwelling souls. Hence, words are bodies, or the dead letter of the word become traps. They often conceal within them what they are intended to disclose. So when we hear or read them, we ought to try to ascertain, to acquire their inner meaning or feeling. Mr. Judge said that words are things. They are alive. Yes, they are alive in proportion to the reality of thought behind them and its purity. They are the living messengers, and we need to take care in their use. As a society, we have become conditioned to talk about our misfortunes and problems. We take our interpretations of events, people, and ourselves, and communicate them to the world, bringing them into existence. So by that admission, when we moan or complain about our lives to others, we are putting those negative words out there to become a reality. When we say something out loud enough times, our words become the truth, not only in our own mind, but in the minds of everyone we are saying them to. If this is really so, then we ask, do we really want to tell ourselves and everybody that we know that we are unlucky in love, unsuccessful, miserable, bored, or whatever else we have been complaining about? Especially because as students of theosophy, we know that it is these exact words, these powerful words, which are creating the life that we now have, or a life we will live in the future. Ancient scriptures tell us that life and death are in the power of the tongue. As it turns out, that is not a metaphor. Remember this: among your most prized possessions, your very prized possessions, are words that you have never spoken. let us will to use with care those living messengers of words. Once again, topic for today, the hidden power of words.
So this morning's talk is about the power of words. And to us, they are hidden because we do not recognize them. But our presentation this morning points out very clearly that words are creators or destroyers. They're very powerful. How does everyone look at that idea? In the world in which we live? Yes, SL.
One of the points the speaker made was about the power of vibration, we presume of sound. So this gets us to the idea of words, not just their meaning, but the combination of rhythm, tone, frequency, and that idea of mantras. So part of the hidden power of words would seem to be not just what we say or don't say, but how we say it. The tone, the sound, the vibration, the rhythm. This whole idea of mantras, which are not just an Indian concept, but mantras is very practical for us.
Yes, if we are to take what we have heard this morning, and that becomes a truth, that becomes a reality, because our words are very powerful. They've been using mantras in India for centuries, and a simple sound calms us down. Or if we have a certain sound that we say or we hear in nature, and we try to find our rhythm with nature, you know, it's the identification with that word. And what that word is what we make of it. Yes, SL.
Thank you for the follow-up. So we read in places like the Bhagavad Gita, for example, the value of gentle speech that causes no anxiety. Yes. So it's not just gentle in terms of idea, but gentle in terms of expression, calm, soft, and likewise how the harsh word can have its effect for life and lives.
Yes, we sometimes wonder, growing up in a family, we had wished perhaps others knew of this idea, that the harsh words that we sometimes heard, we have now come to know that they were said out of ignorance, not out of hate, that, people do not understand that if you're not happy, the world is not going to be happy. It's really the attitude one has, and that seeing life as a positive expression of light, of the best that you can be, is what the Gita says. Do as that which seems best unto you. So, it's mantras incorporate words that elevate ourselves, elevate the mind, You know, there are certain words like the word om. Now, we hear it in many religions, and it's seems to be a part of the new age that oming would be a particular activity. But what it is a repetition of that basic underlying sound of nature. You know, it's like the first expression of the Lagos, or the first expression of when we hear of the sea of the absolute as coming forth, that great breath. Well, we are that Lagos. That great breath is our speech. Yeah. So we are creators. Whether, you know, and whether we know it or not, whatever we have that's come to us, we've made it. Good, bad, or indifferent. So those annoyances of life are the things that we need to pay attention to.
MHW has her hand up.
Please, MHW.
Yeah, two things. One, I do have a comment, but there's also a chat.
Oh, please. Go ahead.
The chat is when we speak, we are sharing our energy with others.
Yes. Yes. Now, that is what is happening. It's an exchange of energy. You know, is it happy? Is it loving? Is it kind energy? You know, what is it that we're trying to express with each other? Do we truly care about each other? Do we truly want the best for each other? So, you know, we just need to say it. You know, we know how, you know, the advertising market knows exactly what we respond to.
Yeah.
They know what words to use to elicit a emotional response. So, these are not bad things. These are just sort of laws of nature, that the human species is a feeling being. So this takes us back to the power of words, just because of how we feel about them. Who hasn't been yelled at in a very high voice? And like, doesn't the body cringe? Even to this day, if someone yells like that in your surroundings, you cower. You know, it's, you know, we hear that with people who are parenting. They become frustrated. So the negative aspect comes out, and it's expressed in our words. But we have to remember that Theosophy tells us everything comes from thought. Nothing, that if we don't think about it, it's not going to come out in words, and it's not going to manifest. But that's what we think about, what we talk about, is what manifests. Hello. Hi, everyone. Yes, SL. Are you?
MHW did have their hand up for a question.
Oh, please.
Thank you. One of the things that we kind of picked up on during the lecture was, if we take the whole process of speech, the expression of it, it starts out with, you know, behind will stands desire. So there's the desire to say something. Desire is very powerful. And then will puts that into action. And then there's the thought. I mean, there's so much involved with speaking. There's thought, there's will, there's desire, and then the actual words come out. So we can see why speech is so powerful. But one of the questions that we wanted to ask is, does the written word carry as much power as the spoken word?
Very interesting question. But it's, look at us. We are reading words that few have spoken. You know, that there are ideas that we express. And sometimes a written idea is more profound because it is both visual and an idea. The spoken word is invisible. So it has a psychic effect on that person because it's seen through the eyes and then processed through the mind. So that's why we are told that if we wrote it down and tried to express it in writing, it becomes clearer to us, you know, how our inability to express it, you know, not always is one able to express it in writing as well as they can do it in speech. But that does not negate the fact that if it's put in writing, it becomes more embedded in one's psyche. Yes, your follow-up?
Yes, but the thing is, when something is put in writing, you don't see the person's facial expressions, you don't hear their tone of voice. And we know with email, it can be very easy to misconstrue what somebody is writing because, you know, maybe they left the comma out somewhere because we know that the way things are written, it could be read many different ways depending on the punctuation. So so we know then that without the facial expressions, without the tone of voice, that we guess it can have as the same amount of impact, but I don't know. It's kind of a curious thing.
Well, we have to remember that words.
Are you going to be there now?
We have distractions, or what's all right? That the words have a potency, you know, that the fact that we do not see someone's expression, we can feel it in the tone of their voice. We're so caught up in the visual world that we are sometimes overwhelmed and we do not hear properly or we do not feel. So, yes, SL.
Oh, just to point out that JJP has had his hand up for a while. Jay, if you want to unmute and ask your question.
Yeah, that's okay. So what about what's happening in the brain and in the mind and in the heart of someone who has extremely limited language set up? Like, say, Helen Keller, before she learned to communicate, what was happening there? Was she animal-like? And so she didn't have a sense of herself. And then also, what about can someone talk about the idea of logos? That's translated as word, isn't it? And what's that mean in the book by John, supposedly, that talks about that in the beginning was the word. I guess it, in Greek, it would be the logos. Thank you.
Well, yeah, yes, that's very interesting because, you know, that we are said to be the logos. We are that light. We are that which is, was, and always will be. That's what we are. We are the logos. Otherwise, we couldn't create. We are, in essence, that deific principle. But we have descended into matter by choice, and we are reascending into spirit. And in this journey, we are taking all of sentient life with us. We are, as self-conscious beings, incorporating all of life into our being. And every form of life is trying to enter that self-conscious kingdom. So we carry the burden of evolution. And we do that through the ideas that we hold, and you know, and how we feel about life. You know, the Buddha says compassion is the great law of laws. SL?
Just to return for a moment to that idea of the relative benefits of the spoken versus the written word. A chat has come in and also some other ideas come to mind. One thing about the written word, especially in books, they become a private conversation between the individual and the author, and therefore freer from distraction, allows one to use in that silence and privacy one's intuition and imagination to try to get at the heart and mind of the communicator as well. Also the idea of the written word can be carried with you all the time in its original form and serve as a reminder and an inspiration. Well, we have to remember that those teachings that have been preserved for countless generations orally, passed down from one generation of adepts to another, were eventually put into a written form, in written symbols, imperishable. So they could become a basis for preserving that knowledge through the ages, a basis to which to check and test and verify. So in either case, sometimes the written or the spoken word can have its advantages. One's neither better than the other, ultimately.
Yes, and we're always taken by the fact that to learn this or hear these teachings, one sat at the feet of a master or someone that had this knowledge. And the only way we learned it is through verbally. It was passed down verbally. And only on symbols and glyphs throughout the world are these ideas expressed also. But it is not until 1875, at the reformation of the Theosophical movement, that these ideas came forth and are expressed in written word. It is a benefit to humanity because they can be referred to again and again and again. You know, we as students look forward to the summer, but the main reason is because we study the Bhagavad Gita together. You know, when it's the same thing year, summer after summer. But it gives us, it refreshes us, because we are told that it speaks to us in seven different ways. And it seems that each year that we come back to it, sometimes we discover a different avenue of looking at it. But it talks to the soul. I think there was another chat, if someone would like to read that. SL?
There are quite a few chats.
Please.
But one idea that comes to mind from reading the chats is that, you know, we can understand that one can be very smart and clever and know the right thing to say. But we think it takes wisdom to know whether it should be said or not, or what not to say. What is the expression? Silence is golden. So it's not only the power of words, but the power of silence.
Yes.
Where does that wisdom come from? To know that, what's the difference between clever and smart and having the wisdom to know what to say and what not to say? Where does that come from, that wisdom?
We think that clever takes care of the moment. Wisdom takes care of the life and our well-being. So often being clever is a very personal attempt to achieve something. So but a wisdom, it's an accumulation of doing that so many times and realizing exactly what you're doing and maybe not liking it as much. So, yes.
Another chat we think is very interesting. In terms of small talk, we know we a lot of gossip and small talk, and it seems to be almost a rule, a custom in society, and recognizing the power of words, what should be our attitudes towards gossip and small talk? And if dealing with it, how do we use our words to move the conversation perhaps to a deeper or better level?
Well, it seems that we are in a plague right now, that everyone is into each other's personal nature, that our culture is one of materialism, and what is very treasured or thought valuable is what we see. And even what we say, you know, that the words that we choose to use to express our life, you know, how often have we said, you know, I don't feel good? That's innocent enough. But what are we really saying? Our personal nature is crying out. It's that quality in us that always wants to be helped, always wants to be assisted, doesn't want to stand on their own. It's just qualities that we've had as children that we've not really let go of. And we don't see them unless there's a stress of words, of actions, of thought. So how do we change our words? Well, we need to change our thoughts. And if they're more universally, if one thinks in more universal terms, you know, one has to become aware that compassion is not an attribute. It's the law. We are all one. And that's hard to comprehend unless one thinks about what those words mean. Eternal, boundless, immutable, omnipresent. Words to try to describe God. But no words can describe it. And it is not a being outside of ourselves. We are the light. And in the Logos is an expression. First there was the word, then there was light. So if we look at it that way, the words that come out of our mouth create or destroy. I love you.
MHW has her hand up.
Please.
MHW. Yes. Thank you. And the difference between gossip and small talk, we know gossip can definitely carry quite a sense of negativity towards that person, and we are advised not to gossip about others. But small talk is kind of a two-edged sword, because if we're at a party and we just meet somebody for the first time, it's the small talk. I mean, we're not going to go delving into metaphysical ideas with somebody when we first, within the first couple of minutes that we meet them, kind of want to get to know them a little better. And so we don't think initially small talk is an issue. We don't think you want to do it long, over the long term. But initially, when we're first meeting somebody, we don't see any issue with small talk. Then you get to know them, and then you can talk about other things.
Well, that's a very interesting idea. You know, that the chatter of life. We always were told that just be kind. Now, are you being kind by cornering someone and chattering away at them, trying to find out about them and, you know, elicit something from them? Is that being kind? Or if being kind is by simply saying hello and being cordial and, you know, and friendly. And but the biting questions of eliciting something sometimes can be problematic. You know, you have to let people express themselves as best they see fit, but I mean, certainly questions of provoking questions in them is what we always try to do. TK?
A part of the earlier question from JJP related to someone who is not developed in speech, and how does that correspond to the individual? And or does it suggest that there's a less of a development of the individual? And we'd have to say, you know, in the case, as was brought up with Helen Keller, we'd like to use an analogy. You know, parents oftentimes will evaluate or judge or have the impression that their child is not developing at a certain rate because they have not yet developed their speech yet. But actually, that child can be right up there with the rest of the kids and beyond. It's just that one side of it hasn't developed. And you know, in the case of Helen Keller, certainly, and we understand that her teacher actually was a theosophist. So all it was she didn't have the ability to share her thoughts the way the rest of us do. Certainly, when we talk to each other and when we read, that helps, you know, that we participate in each other's education by doing so. Perhaps Helen Keller until finally she reached the age where she could really have conversations. It was self-development all along. And if you read some of the things that she's read, and if you watch on YouTube some of the conversations that she has with others, it's just amazing how gracious, and if we can use the word developed, she seems to be. It's really neat. So that might also help when we're interacting with those who perhaps English is not their first language. Careful not to make any judgments there, but just to participate in their education as they participate in ours as well, through communication.
Yes, we think that's a point well made, that the attitude that we have, is there any follow up with that, TK?
No.
Okay. Yes. MH.
Yeah, in regards to that, there's a chat here. It says, without knowing the literal meaning of a foreign language directed to oneself, can the gist be figured out by context? And then there was a response to that. It said, without knowing the literal meaning of foreign language, the gist can be figured out by context, in my opinion. So, we know that, just using hand signals and tone of voice can help when there's a language difference. But we think you can get the gist. And we can't forget bullying. We haven't mentioned the impact of the words in bullying, how really horrific that can be. So we just wanted to put that out.
Well, yeah, yes to that, but we live in a society or in a world where that is what is promoted. I don't know of anyone who has not been bullied in some way, shape, or form. And it's that idea of separateness. It's that idea of an outside God that envelops our entire thinking process. If we're looking outside for the answers or for the words, what we find out are words that we share with each other to communicate certain ideas. That's the end of the chats.
We do have a few more chats. Most recent one, when someone talks too much or shares too much of their personal life, maybe they need help, but definitely they are downloading their energy on you because they are feeling too much.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting, downloading it. So we've had a lot of people download information in our presence, and sometimes we need to just be aware that that's what's going on and give that person a vent. But we can be conscious of it and try to be of some assistance in whatever way we can. Sometimes a word is not necessary. Sometimes just a simply by sitting there smiling and accepting. That's a feeling as well. It's one that is expressed by the word of love, like word love or unity. It's acceptance, brotherhood, acceptance. So that's why words, when we say them, focuses back to that which we understand. So if we say Arjuna, what ideas come to mind? Lower self, animal nature. When we say Krishna, what words come to mind? Our higher self, great being. So words have these powers. And so that when we focus our mind, often a sound will help focus that. We've heard the word mantram used. There are many such mantrams that can be used, but one must not do it without meaning, just passively saying the word and not having engaged the heart. So it is empty. So, yes, SL.
Well, along that line of the previous chat, if someone is, quote, downloading their problems, how do we know when they really want our advice or they just want a vent? Is there a way we can tell?
Well, sometimes no. Sometimes by just asking. And just saying, is there a problem? Or is there something you need to talk about? Or why are you downloading all this on me right now? Or we can just simply sit and listen. We have a multiple of choices that we can do or how we want to act. If it's a friend, or if it's somebody on a bus just downloading on you as you sat next to them or they sat next to you. It's different. Some of it is just idle chatter. And some of it is an expression of a confusion and a wanting to have somebody validate their existence. So, we're coming to the end of our morning session, and we hope you found this stimulating at least, and questions brought up. But we'd like to remind you that next Sunday is a special meeting. We hold it in high regard, and it's the founding of the United Lodge of Theosophists, along the lines laid out by H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, and that we come to the show gratitude to Robert Crosby for the formulation of the United Lodge along those lines that were first laid out. I remind you that all activities of this lodge, this Zoom meeting, whatever, are all done on a voluntary basis, through service, through money, and through time. So anyone wishing to participate, we are always open to volunteers. So, you can volunteer at any ULT site. With that, good morning, have a great day, and may these words of wisdom, follow you throughout your life. The meeting adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.